Sorry?
I have to put on the recorder or else Matthew's not going to forgive me on that. Okay. Well, I think we're holding Kfar Bi'arnu.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's speaking about everything in the world has a tachlis, and the tachlis is in line with whatever you would say the special quality of that person is, or that entity, not a person. It's impossible that a person wouldn't have any activities that don't relate specifically to his chelik of nefesh, which is aloikis, which is divine. So what are those activities that we can say relate directly to that? So obviously we're going to find activities whose significance are not in any way physical, and they relate to a different world. Let's give an example. Let's say somebody's blind. He's born blind, and as he's developing, he begins to understand that there is something called sight, which he's devoid of. So one of the things that he's going to try to figure out is, what are the activities that sightful people engage in that he's not shaykh to? In other words, a description of that world is, since he's not part of that universe, and there are people that are, so I'm going to have to find things that are relevant, a range of activities that have meaning only in that context. So here also, activities in the world of mitzvahs that can be translated as being part of the physical world. It makes for a better family, it makes for this, that, the other thing, really, really is not giving you any insight that there's another framework of inyanim to which shayach to. So we're going to need to find mitzvahs that are, in other words, what mitzvahs are activities that relate to the world of neshamas. Behemim yuchadim ala adnum fi ma'ilas nafshaloikis. So these are special and unique to him. I want to add just another nekuda, which sometimes is troubling, but I guess, when you makarev people, so one approach of kirev is, I'll prove you there's a God, I'll prove that I gave the Torah. If you gave the Torah, you must keep it. If you must keep it, this is what it says to keep, and, ipso facto, this is proven. That's one approach. There's another approach, which is the nida will make your family life better, and Shabbos will improve the quality of your connection with your children, and so on. And I deliver mitzvahs in a framework that appeals to people, and it's also a valid approach, and it draws people in and it has a very good effect. The question is, but how are we going to make the leap to what mitzvahs really are? You obviously, if you stay with that mitzvahs are another type of new age activity of self-help stuff, you never get to really what mitzvahs are. And also some mitzvahs are very hard to explain that way. It's nice when Shabbos brings the family on the table, but when you have somebody who can't walk and he feels very bad, he can't come to the and you need to wheel him in without an Erev, that doesn't hold water anymore. And if your wife is very upset, she's stuck in an apartment because there's no Erev, then it's not going to help that. And it's not going to last because it's not exact. And the answer is, there's an expectation of like tam or u, just like if I'm trying to make music, I'm trying to do something to the world of music, I'm going to play a few fun pieces. It makes a lot of noise and bangs a lot, and ask him to listen for how many times it bangs during the concert. But you figure that something will seep in and stimulate a sleeping muscle, nerve, that can relate to it. So here also, the belief, and again, this is, I think, Chabad's approach, where getting people to do mitzvahs at all costs is important, is because the stimulus, no matter, is a genuine stimulus. The stimulus of a mitzvah and something inside the person will feel it. And that will cause the change in the person. It's a valid approach. Just so that we understand the context in which it works. I mean, Chabad actually has another approach, and I think it's important just to explain it. Their approach is that every Maisa mitzvah is significant in its own right, and it's a piece of Kvod Shemayim, and therefore it doesn't make a difference if the person never did anything else's life but take the lulav and esrog, but at the end of the day, you have a Maisa that actually has a very significant makom, and the fact that it's coming from somebody who's never done mitzvahs, and this might be this person's only mitzvah, in the scheme, in the mystical scheme of things, it's important. That's their approach, and so on. Okay. Vimtishal v'toma im kein hari kol ha-pulus v'chodos kol echad v'chom v'nevroim ha-pulus v'schayev esmeni me'atzmai v'einim v'shane pulosom. So he says, well, let me ask you a question based on my line of reasoning, that there are certain activities that are natural and specific to someone. So all of the activities that are natural to any being are automatic. They're reflexes, instincts, and so on. That's almost goes into defining it as being natural, normal. So why aren't we mitzvah people? And just like you don't have to teach a kid to suck milk or to engage in any type of effort to nurse, it's natural to him. Most of it is walking. A child learns himself how to walk and so on. So why can't we have the same thing over here also? Dovaza ein shayla. Kim royu she you elo pulas pas madam hala yetzer a shavar badam hu mevio la pulas haroz she boz mimena mitzad yetzer a shabai. So he says, our understanding is, it's not that it's unnatural, it's there's a counterforce to it. So for instance, let's take an example. Giving to another person, helping another person, there's a natural part to it. When we give something, and the fact that I can arouse people to giving, means it's something natural. However, I also have in myself a counter nature of desire to possess something. So very rarely do you get the person saying, well, why in the world should I give to so, should I help so and so? Most of the time the person is struggling, I need it for myself, I want it for myself, and so on. Actually, a few weeks ago, someone was speaking at a tzedakah function, someone from the area here, actually, and he said that when he was young, his mother was a blockhead of March of Dimes, which meant that she had to cover an entire block and knock on every door to ask for the March of Dimes, and the kids did it for her. So he said, you know, so you get all sorts of answers of people. Some people give, some people say they gave, some people say they gave at the office, whatever it is, fine. But he said there was one person that answered them, he told him to come from March of Dimes. The person says, I do not give charity. And he was like dumbstruck at someone saying that. He says, what? He says, I do not give charity. It's a principle, I don't give charity. Fine. And he said, you know, that was like an answer. He just never heard, no Yid would say it, let alone from Yid. I don't think even a non-from Yid would say something like that. But most of the time, it's not because we don't have it in us to do right, it's we have a Yetzirah kicking against it.
So
he says, he explains, this is the thrust of Moshe Rabbeinu's taina to Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is taining Azina Shemayim Baretz, they never changed their ways, and why are you doing bad? It's a big difference between the stars, the sun going around, and a person wanting to do ra. And his explanation is, it's never the pshat that the Adam does not want to do taiv. It's that the person has something pulling him away. So I can come with a tain at him and say, this is not who you are, this is not what you ought to be, and I usually will get, the person will be responsive. It's always dealing with an issue rather than akhosh the thing itself, really. Omnam, he says, you can't say that in this area all of humanity is equal. Even though, generally speaking, both in features and generally people are the same, the affinity towards things that are more ruchnius is stronger in Klal Yisrael. So he says we have potential in us to reach heights that no one else has. The important key word here is potential. It's not a given. Just because I'm a member of Klal Yisrael doesn't make me into a ruchnius degree person automatically. It makes me into a person who has a capacity for ruchnius that other people don't have. But it's not, there's no automatic tzidkis. I also once heard, I guess this must be weird, it's the week of his yahrzeit, so I guess it's a Lubavitch, a question and answer. Someone asked him, who's better, a righteous guy or a wicked Jew? And he answered very well, very right. He said, are you asking in terms of what is or in terms of potential? In terms of what is, Kadosh Baruch Hu judges each person for what he is. And your yichus won't help you. If anything, it'll be to your detriment. You who come from very chashver yichus, you should have known better, you should do better, expect more out of you, and so on and so forth. But when you talk about the potential, well, yes, Klal Yisrael's potential is great, and that's why we marshal Klal Yisrael. I want to add one more point. He speaks about Shar Ha'umos Akum. Sha'amim Akum. In Lashon Kodesh, Lashon Deberes, Akum and Umas Olam are almost, what's the word for it? They are interchangeable. And, you know, yes, a Goy doesn't have a din of Avodah Zarah, but we speak of Umas Olam and Akum interchangeably. And the logic is because Avodas Kochavim is a religious, it's a religious expression within a very coarse medium. So the look and the idea that I am not my own boss and something comes from somewhere is a religious axiom, and everyone has it. Since the Umos Olam have a much less refined sense of ruchnius, and much coarser, then it dresses up in Avodah Zarah. It sort of is expressed Avodah Zarah. But that's what it is. Avodah Zarah is... The Avodah Zarah is simply a... It's a much more coarse... It's a nefesh that's not refined, understands as such, and that's why Klal Yisrael understands Hashem Echad. That's why it says Akadosh Baruch Hu was chilek lehem. Akadosh Baruch Hu allowed Umos Olam to engage in Avodah Zarah, because he was, because it's more befitting to not of a Zohar Mamish, but Beshituf. They don't have the sense, the fine sense of being able to be Messiahis to a God that is totally bodiless and so on. It's very difficult. The Gamze Muchach Loima, Vezer, Ke Oilam Hazer, Ashaboy Minde Adam Hu Oilam Ateva. The framework of the world where we are is the world of nature. So anything that deals with physical, natural stuff is across the board for everyone. And even though you find different species, polar bears enjoy living on the Arctic rather than Florida, and alligators tend to shun Alaska, that doesn't do with the weather. It doesn't have to do anything with really that it's fundamentally a different organism. That's not called a difference. But ruchnius is not something that you find across the board.
He's
saying here a very, very significant point. Let's go over it. This is a point that Maral makes in many places, and it's worth spelling out. The Maral has a concept that he uses many times called Nivdol. Nivdol means distinct, different. It's something which is not of the same kind as anything else. So let's take a look a second. Let's look around. There are many items and elements in this world that we live in, and they all are interrelated in some ways. There are things that genuine ruchnius, malachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mitzvahs, and so on, the only thing we can say about them is they are not of this world. Because we're physical and our senses need to behold something in order to describe it, and the words that we have relate only to ruchnistic entities, then we can't say definitive things about ruchnius. We can say definitive things about the nature of this world, because we are of this world and in this world. We can describe them and understand what we're talking about. When I speak of things like Malachim and certain HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the best I can say is he is not like anything you experience. It's Muvdal means it doesn't share any common denominator with anything that we experience. And that's why we have it's a world. And he says something very fascinating. He says, were it to be equal always, then it would be nature and not a ruchnius. Let's take a mashal for this. Let's take a few mashal. The simple mashal is, if every time you open the light switch on Shabbos, thunder would knock you out, then Shmirah Shabbos would be the equivalent of the laws of physics. What's the difference? You know, x-rays you don't see, but every time you turn an x-ray on a body, it affects it in the same exact way. You know, depending on nature of what it's going through and so on, you get the same results. So even though x-rays are kind of mysterious, they're x-rays, but they're teva because they happen always, all the time, and they're fully described in this world terms. Ruchnius is not. So I can never pin it down with regularity and say, well, somebody who fasts Mondays and Thursdays is able to do three nisim a week, one of which includes a lutchias ames or something. I can't make any of those statements. And this is very important. The Rambam says it by nevuah. The Rambam says that when a person prepares himself for nevuah, he may get nevuah, he may not get nevuah. Nevuah is something which is a communication with the beyond, the other. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu either is there or not, but I can't force it into a framework and say, oh, you know, I have a down pat. You say this and this Yiratzen, this and this Tefillah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to come along. It would, if that were true, it would take it and make it into a road part. I think it's one of the problems. Whenever something happens, like they had this thing now, you know, with the boys that were missing and killed, you know, the Mekubalim would say this, they say that. Anytime it becomes predictable, unfortunately, you know, a lot of them were left with a lot of egg splattered all over them. The problem is, anytime this stuff becomes, you try to translate it into something that can have, what do they call in science, repeatable effects, you're losing the ruchnistic quality of it. It's just like a person is hard to predict. You can't predict ruchnis and say, okay, this and this. That's why we use the concept of the word askula. Askula means it doesn't have a direct cause and effect. I can't actually box it. I can't make it something that, you know, will repeat itself every time it happens. It just doesn't work that way. It will become teva again, and that's why all of these things where, you know, my mind, I don't work many miracles, so I can't speak as an experienced person, but you get this type of, let me give you something that I just actually saw today, that's why I was so disturbed to it. There was a story, somebody once went to the stipler, they have a daughter. The daughter hasn't got, you know, she's an older girl, she doesn't have a shidduch, famous story. So the stipler asked them, did they make a kiddush for her when she was born? They said, they forgot, whatever it was. So the stipler said, well, it's all the brachas you get at the kiddush, help you, and so on and so forth. And sure enough, they made a kiddush for her, and she got engaged. That's the story of the stipler, I think it's a true story. But it's become like a thing now. So every time there's a girl who's having Hatam Shech, they make a Kiddush to celebrate her birth 25, 28 years before. And it becomes like, it's not that type of thing. It's something which, for whatever reason, he was inspired to tell that to her. But it has to be understood as a one-time event, or else it becomes part of the psychology of Shidduchim. It reduces it. It doesn't. It when you take something that is metaphysical and reduce it to the physical, it becomes, the way there's a physical is by making it automatic. So check back X and then you get result Y. That's something that I think in a certain sense undermines what you're trying to do. The same way that doing mitzvahs in a way that are, you know, this mitzvah is good for this psychology, that psychology, the other psychology. If people ask me sometimes about doing alternative medicines that include sort of meditation and stuff like that, you know, all sorts of different wuji stuff. So my sense is, if you can explain it in natural terms, that the meditation relaxes you, makes the blood pressure go down, and so on and so forth, fine. Then we're okay. If you need an other to take care of it, you have to hook into some sort of angel power, force, demon, whatever it is, that's not good. Now, do you have to be able to... it won't hold today. I see you're tired a bit. It's been a long Shabbos, what? Okay. Umipnei ki akum heim mina olam ativi, lakachim shivim umos. Goyim have more of a sense of the natural world, they're less shy after this world. So b'meila they come in a bundle of 70. Ka'olam ha'teva nivra b'shivas yimei breishis. U'kinega shivas yimei olam ha'teva heim shivim umos. Kinega kol yom ha'sara. So they fit, 70 umos fit into the terms of nature. Va'uma yechidi hoisa ala teva v'kinega ha'shmini ka'shminu ala teva. V'kachrol yisrael ha'teva shal ala teva. So he says, Klal Yisrael is Shaykh Tashmini, Bris, Mila, and so on, all these things. I want to add a point to this. People make a mistake when they talk about the 7 and 8. This is Teva, this is Al Teva. It's not right. It's not described correctly. Seven is Teva. That which is beyond Teva is all I know about it is that it's beyond Teva. If I tell you, do you see this? And you tell me you don't see it, all you can tell me is that you don't see it. In other words, eight is something which is beyond Teva. It's not Teva. So he says, Ulkacha Uma Yisraeli, Ashabach Hashem Yisroch Lechalko, Heimeim Nisiyachtu Bepulos Aloikis, Shei Mitzvah Satayra, Lefi Madregas Nafsho Aloikis, Bemashu Bechon Nevuroch HaKodesh Yisro Shchun Beneyem, Ve'akum Fi Malosam Noslam Zayim Mitzvah Shem Shem Neim Mitzvah Noam. So, Klal Yisrael is shayach to phenomena that are beyond Teva. It's very interesting. The Khazari, when he speaks about in the Khazari puts the dogish of Emuna on Klal Yisrael. In other words, the belief in Klal Yisrael and the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's the Khazari's dogish. He doesn't speak about Emuna and personal life. He speaks about it more, the truth arises with Klal Yisrael. A point that he keeps making time and again is no nation ever had prophecy, Ruach HaKodesh, Shechina. These are items that are unique to Klal Yisrael, and to him that's the pillar of Emunah. We're the only ones that touch base with something beyond things that fit into Teva.
I'm not sure I understand the difference between what people misunderstand about 7 and 8 and,
right.
And under Teva and not
right.
Beyond Teva.
So 8, you can't, 8 can't be, 8 is not a definitive number in this sense. 8, all the quality that 8 possesses is beyond our world. We don't have more than 7 days. There's Yom Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi'i, Chamishi, Shishi, Shabbos. There is no eighth day. So anything, I'll give you a mashal. If I have a measuring rod, I'm trying to measure how tall you are, and my measuring rod goes up to 5 feet, the only statement I can make about you is you're more than 5 feet. I don't have anything on my ruler that can translate your height. So when I say that you pass the 5 foot stick, all I mean is that you pass the 5 foot stick. I can't make a definitive statement about it. So any mitzvah that is shayach to eighth and Klal Yisrael and so on, or Yom HaShmini and all these things in Shavuos, the only thing I can say is we have 7 days, and all I can say is this does not fit into 7 days. It's like, you know, a bar mitzvah kid and his hands are sticking out of his jacket already. That's what it means. It's too, the world is too small to hold that mitzvah. And that's why he says umas ha'olam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have zayim mitzvah no, because they're shayach to the world of Teva. Let's take another place where it says something like that. The Gemara says that chesed l'umim chatos. Stocker that a guy does, he does for himself, and that's why it's a chatas and so on and so forth. You find people in Muslim that are generous people. Well, what exactly do we want from them? And it's probably going on this, that at the end of the day, if I do something because it hurts my feelings or emotions to see X, Y, or Z, it's noble, it's good, but it's not quite what we're talking about in the world of mitzvahs. The world of mitzvahs is, let's say somebody comes to the ask for tzedakah, and the person is obnoxious, and I don't like the person, and don't sympathize them at all. But the person fits criteria for his tzedakah. So I have to be able to say, he fits the criteria for his tzedakah, and that's that. It's not because it makes me feel good. And again, a child, you always try to say, did you do this? Did you see how good it made you feel? And so on and so forth. That's okay. because again, we're bringing into it. But ultimately, tzedaka is because I'm obligated. It's not because an example by Moshe Rabbeinu. It says that the reason why he was chosen as a manik is because vayar nevayetze vayar v'sevlachav. He saw how they were. He saw how they were being pained. So I was once thinking, you know, when you grow up with somebody together, so they're very powerful feelings. Those feelings are normal, natural. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't grow up with them. He had no contact with them. He was their brother in name only. He wasn't part of it emotionally. But he felt the responsibility for a brother, because it's not a question of do I feel brotherly towards him. The question is, what are my responsibilities? And it belongs to a different world of values. It's not feeling good or not feeling good about it. Or Perek Kamar of Zorah, Hashem misinai bo, v'zorach misay alomo yifim arpara. My boy beseir, or my boy bepar. What was the Kodesh Baruch doing in Paran and Seir? It says, Melamed shechsa Kodesh Baruch HaTorah kol oylam, v'lei rotzu lekabla at shaboy yisol kibluwa. Famous Medrash, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked the guy he wanted him to Kabul. They said, what does it say? Lo sitzav. They said, no, our holy great-grandfather had a Baruch of Achar v'tichya. We need to be able to kill. He asked Bnei Yishmol, and he told them, what does it say? They said, Lo signal. He says, well, we can't because our heritage is stealing. So they all didn't check out. Biru b'zeh advarim shamarnu, ki mitzvah atoya shampuz alokiyas misas Yisrael, So he explains the Medrash, and he says it more beforeish other places. It doesn't mean literally that Kadosh Baruch Hu picked a Sefer Torah and went to each Ummah, knocked on the door and said, would you like this? And they asked, well, what does it say? And they said, oh, no, we can't do that, so on and so forth. It doesn't mean that, obviously. What it means is, it was like Cinderella's shoe, pardon the marshal. Kadosh Baruch Hu took Torah and he went around to Ummah Solom. And he said, okay, does the Torah fit this nation? And he said, it can't. This is a nation that lives off stealing. It's a nation that lives off murder. It's a nation that lives off niyuf. They're not going to be able to handle it. It's not, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't debating whether or not they would be willing to accept it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was determining that they really can't. It's like, you know, a college gives some entrance examination, and what it's supposed to be is the determination of how likely are you to succeed in finishing the course that they're offering, or how likely is it you can pay for it, but the main point is can you complete the coursework? You know, are you shayach to it? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives, he went around and looked at the Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's not that I chose Klal Yisrael just at random because, you know, I sort of like the grandparents, so on and so forth. I didn't find another Ummah that could live with the entire Torah comfortably, that it fits them. It doesn't mean a guarantee that Klal Yisrael is going to do the mitzvahs. Klal Yisrael produced plenty of big Rishoyim, but never for the lack of an ability to be Shayach to Torah. In other words, the ability to feel at some point that the tzicha is bad, that amnam b'medrash b'yeh k'loy b'lvad she'enu mukhanu l'teira ala pula salaykis ha'eshu mukhanu l'hefetzeh. The Medrash is also stressing that the Ummah ha'olam have properties that actually what's the right word for it? Gives them a predisposition for the opposite of it. Let's talk about this outside a minute and let's explain it. if in other words, if a certain Ummah has in itself the property of being very assertive, a need to take control, a need to conquer other countries, it's going to be impossible to impose Torah on it simply because of the very nature. Their nature, it's not only don't they have the nature that's sensitive to something ruchnius, but it's the other way around. They have a natural affinity for things that are problematic. So the Ummah Sa'olam, because they naturally have an affinity for something else, the major Ummah Sa'olam, that's why they're not ready for Torah, because it's a completely distorted sense of right, wrong, and so on. In other words, when Avram or Yitzhak benched them, he knew what he was. He wasn't giving an idle bracha. Nobody benches your farm in Maine to grow bananas. It doesn't. That's not the right bracha for it. The bracha that you give suits. It's something that has potential in the person. And when he told Esav, you live by sword. Let's give an example. I this is a very extreme example, but I think it's an important example. The Nazi ideology, for whatever if you want to call it ideology, but the core axiom of their philosophy was that the strong is right because that's what nature dictates. Nature dictates that the mighty sit around and last, and the weak fall to the wayside. And the weak people that try to get around it by underhand ways are disrupting a certain very important and powerful natural process. So that the strong shall kill out the weak is really similar to when you go to a field and you let the puny, you pull out of the ground the stuff that's really not great. You don't give it tender love and care. You pull it out and get rid of it because you want the strong and healthy crops to survive. We'll do the same thing with people. Let's get rid of the sickly, the weak, and the non-strong courageous, and so on. They despise Christianity. They really, really enjoyed a pagan type of brutish strength. That's what they worship. So it was something about the nefesh of that nation that they actually had this sense, and therefore they can't have a Torah sense because their hardware is wired very differently. It's, you know, again, we'll pick the Russians have sort of a sense that they don't trust or believe in anything. Honesty, integrity is something that's not there, and it's, you know, and something that's very much part and parcel of a certain national character. And so on. You can't determine these things absolutely, but you see it's a character that runs by it, and that's going to be very difficult vis-a-vis Torah. Torah but is coming.
They don't have the ability for Torah to refine them and them to do tshuva and then take some Torah?
I think they can do it as an imposition. It's so just like, you know, there are certain things that a person might not do, might recoil from it because not honest. Certain things where I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but the law's against it, and there's consequences, and I think I'll keep it safe. So they, if they subordinate themselves to Klal Yisrael in the sense that they decide to keep the halachas and so on, they can do that. But they can't. It's hard for them to recognize in themselves the inherent right and wrong with different things like that. Okay, we'll hold it here.
Okay, beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Call to bye.